Our next case for this morning is Babo against Holder. If you would like to adjust the podium, feel free, but if that's okay.
That's fine, Your Honor.
All right. So, Ms. Dominguez?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Linda Dominguez, attorney for the appellant Serge Christian Babo Niamsi. Mr. Babo is a native and citizen of Cameroon, whose native language is French. He is the husband of a U.S. citizen, father of two living children, and one who died at birth. He has an approved visa petition based on his marriage. The government claims that the motion to reopen, which I filed, is deficient because there was a lack of evidence concerning Mr. Babo's first marriage to a U.S. citizen. However, that is due to the fact that he had given all documents in support of the first visa petition to his former attorney, Albert Aga Nwanga. The government would have Mr. Babo in a catch-22. He must demonstrate the validity of his first marriage, but they refuse to even acknowledge that Mr. Nwanga has failed to perform his duties as an attorney. At no point in time does the BIA or the government admit that Mr. Nwanga has been practicing law without a proper license. Furthermore, the government argues that Mr. Babo should have been more diligent in pursuing his immigration case against Mr. Nwanga and said that being busy is no excuse. I would note that Mr. Babo was busy with a fiancé who had a difficult first pregnancy that ended in the stillbirth of their first son in July 2006. In spite of this heartrending situation, they married and suffered through a second difficult pregnancy that ended in a premature birth in September 2007. Mr. Babo was the primary caregiver of their premature son while finishing up his college degree, which he received in May 2008.
Before you get any further, I would appreciate it if you would discuss for a moment whether this court has jurisdiction to entertain this petition, because at least under our decision in Kukana, which obviously the Supreme Court is now thinking about, it seems to me we would not have jurisdiction. This was a discretionary move by the board. The motion to reopen comes long after any regulatory time periods for it. What should we do about that?
Yes, Your Honor. I will address that. On November 10, 2009, the Supreme Court heard oral argument concerning jurisdiction of the circuit courts over petitions for review of denials of motions to reopen removal proceedings. The case of Kukana v. Holder is in an interesting posture since the Solicitor General supports the petitioner's position, and in fact the Supreme Court requested an amicus curiae attorney to argue in opposition.
Right, we know that. So what should we do at this point? That's the law of the circuit. On the other hand, the Supreme Court obviously has it under advisement. They'll do what they want to do.
Well, I would note that the Solicitor General stated in the oral argument that, quote, if something new comes up, we understand Congress is wanting that to have been judicially reviewable. That's found at page 20 of the official transcript, and even stated that the Attorney General has the authority to allow more than one motion to reopen in certain circumstances, which was the situation in Kukana, where it was actually the reopening of the denial of a second motion to reopen. In this case, there's only one. This is the first motion to reopen that has been filed. I would suggest that if the court is not comfortable sort of pre-deciding, that the court waits for a decision from the Supreme Court and holds this case in abeyance until the Supreme Court makes a decision in Kukana, since there is a jurisdictional issue.
All right. So, but then the other question really is, suppose Kukana is wrong and the Supreme Court says there's no jurisdictional bar. What the standard had been before Kukana and some similar cases that we had decided was abuse of discretion. And so there, I think that throws you back into the problem that it had been a couple of years, that you can't really criticize the board for not doing something 2 years earlier based on after-acquired facts, in a sense. And that's why we have this back and forth about which marriage is it that had to be legitimate, if the lawyer had performed perfectly, what kind of evidence would have been before the board. The board essentially says that Mr. Babo wasn't diligent, and thus this is too long. Why is that an abuse of discretion?
I would submit that that's an abuse of discretion in this particular case because Mr. Baba wasn't just sitting around doing nothing, you know, just going off and living his life. He was trying to. He did not discover the false nature of Mr. Nguana's ability to practice law until he had been represented by this. I'm not even sure how to call him, since he's not licensed to practice law. He's not an attorney.
Well, he was under suspension. I think he had been an attorney, just hadn't kept up his license. Is that right?
Under Pennsylvania law, and I'm Pennsylvania barred attorney, so I can speak to this. Under Pennsylvania regulations, if you do not take the mandatory CLE credits and keep those up, and that's 12 a year, then you are not allowed to practice law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, absolutely not. There's not a question about it. I checked the records, and he is not licensed to practice law in any other jurisdiction in the United States. In order to practice in front of the Executive Office of Immigration Review and the Department of Homeland Security, you must be properly authorized to practice law in one jurisdiction before in the United States. He is not. The fact that he is not licensed to practice means that because he's under suspension, that means that he is not allowed to practice before the Immigration Court or the Board of Immigration Appeals.
Okay. So let's assume, for the sake of argument, the Board is, and the Attorney General have suggested a couple of different standards over the last few years for assessing an effectiveness of counsel, but one constant in those standards has been the need to show prejudice from the ineffectiveness of the lawyer or the non-lawyer, whoever, the ineffectiveness from the situation that arose. How can Mr. Baba have shown that he would have been eligible for relief at the time he was being represented by Mr. Nguama?
If Mr. Nguama
had known about that first marriage.
I can only go by what I know of my client at this particular time. And I can say that I believe that he had a good first marriage, and the fact that there was not an issue about the first marriage is buttressed by the fact that he was granted an approval of the visa petition by the second wife. Because if Citizenship and Immigration Services, which is the body within DHS that adjudicates visa petitions based on marriage, among others, had a question about his first marriage being fraudulent, they would have brought that up.
That would have precluded granting the second.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so I would suggest that that's a red herring that the government is throwing in, saying, well, obviously he could not have prevailed because there's no proof that he could have prevailed with the motion to reopen. The proof is in the fact that the second visa petition was approved.
Did he disclose the first marriage in the second visa petition?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Absolutely. I would like to reserve.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Mr. Nsenga?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Andrew Nsenga for the respondent, the Attorney General. Over 4 years after the agency completed petitioner's removal proceedings and over 2 years after petitioner learned of prior counsel's alleged error, petitioner filed an untimely motion to reopen. Denying that motion, the board properly exercised its discretion and find that petitioner was neither diligent nor that he demonstrated the requisite prejudice from his prior counsel's alleged error. I'd like to address Your Honor's concerns regarding Kukana. First, although obviously the respondent disagrees with the court's decisions in Kukana, of course, the court is bound by those decisions. And specifically, the court's decision in Jezerski, I'm probably not pronounced that correctly, held that the court does not have jurisdiction to review a motion to reopen when the underlying allegation is ineffective assistance of counsel. And the court has held that both diligence and prejudice When an alien disagrees with the agency's determination regarding prejudice and diligence, that's a factual disagreement. According to this, simply would not be a question of law or constitutional issue. That being said, of course, the respondent disagrees with that holding. However, the Supreme Court is currently deciding it, and I can't speculate.
Do you think this court should hold this case until Kukana is decided, or do you think there is some other? I mean, we could, of course, simply decide on the basis of our own circuit precedent and let further petitions go to the Supreme Court if they're necessary.
Well, Your Honor, of course, if this court chose to hold this case in abeyance, certainly that would be within this court's discretion. I would note the court did deny a motion to hold the case in abeyance previously.
Right.
The effect of that, of course, I can't say the court is anyway bound by that. Of course, if the court desires to hold the case, it certainly may. But in the interest sort of pragmatic considerations of ensuring that there are not agency or judicial resources wasted, we would ask that the court, if it did dismiss under Kukana, that would at least address basically the merits of the case. That would at least present a pragmatic roadblock to a petition for panel rehearing, or waste more agency resources by going back to the agency, refiling what would likely be the same motion reopened, and have it come back.
We've actually done that in a number of orders. We've followed the jurisdictional thing, and then we've said, but if we're wrong, here's what. Well, you can do that if it's going to be a denial. If it's going to be a grant, then clearly that system would not work.
Of course, Your Honor. That would, of course, throw a bit of a problem in the system. The other sort of initial fact I'd like to address, of course, is the Attorney General's second decision in Compion. And, of course, the respondent has asked this and several other courts to remand back to the agency to apply the pre-Compion or Lozada and Assad standards. However, in this case, it's simply unnecessary because, despite petitioner's protestations, there's no evidence of diligence nor prejudice in this case. And both are required under the pre-Compion law and under Compion law. Admittedly, the standard for prejudice is different than what would be evaluated. But in this case, there's no evidence whatsoever of that first marriage. And
what about counsel's argument, though? I mean, we've certainly seen plenty of cases where there was a problem in a first marriage, and then somebody winds up staying here long enough that they have a perfectly legitimate second marriage in any sense of the term, but the taint of the first one precludes the grant of an adjustment of status petition on the second one. So if he disclosed the first marriage and the agency looked at it, why isn't that some indication that they didn't spot any problem with it?
Well, first, I think petitioner's argument before this court presents a variety of problems on that matter. First, I did not get an opportunity to check. I don't believe the I-130 application revealed that first marriage. It did not reveal that he had violated voluntary departure either. But regardless, CIS is not determining whether or not the prior marriage was appropriate. It's determining whether the current marriage is appropriate. In fact, CIS...
No, but CIS wouldn't grant a petition based on a current marriage if there was a history of fraud, of marriage fraud.
With all due respect, Your Honor, I'd like to believe that may be the case, but there's nothing in the regulations requiring CIS to deny an alien in a 130. The 45 is a whole other matter, but the 130 is simply an indication that this second marriage is bona fide.
Has CIS ever considered simplifying its procedures?
I can't speak to that, Your Honor. And with regard to, obviously, there are the problem of parallel proceedings in cases like this. CIS adjudicates a 130, removal proceedings have been completed. But that was essentially what Congress understood. There are waivers of inadmissibility that assume that this sort of situation does occur. But in this case, there's simply no evidence of prejudice. The first marriage is the relevant marriage for this court's purposes. The second marriage is irrelevant. The agency has no interest in the second marriage's legitimacy, absent some notion of what happened in the first marriage. There's no evidence whatsoever that that marriage was bona fide.
Has anybody ever told Mr. Babo that that's the evidence he really needs to assemble? I'm a little worried about saying to him, well, you know, we've just discovered some issue in the past that is the crucial, pivotal issue for your case, but you never told us anything about it because we never told you that was the issue.
Well, Your Honor, he has been represented by several counsel over the years.
Many of them not much of a credit to the bar.
I can't speak to that, Your Honor.
yeah, well, we won't.
I won't speak to that, Your Honor, if that's acceptable. The fact is, though, he has presented some evidence. And the other sort of concern I have about petitioner's argument before this court is now petitioner claims, I don't have the evidence I gave to the prior counsel. There's absolutely no evidence in this record of that. No evidence. And the statements of petitioner's counsel are not evidence. There's absolutely no evidence in this record to suggest he gave all the documents related to that first marriage. Indeed, the only document that would possibly be necessary is an affidavit from him. Certainly, petitioner would have been capable of presenting an affidavit, perhaps from himself and his wife, of his first wife, of the legitimacy of that marriage. There's no evidence of that whatsoever. And absent some evidence regarding that first marriage, the agency has no ability. It's not whether it's obvious or not. The agency simply has no ability to find that petitioner presented evidence of prejudice from the alleged error in not filing a motion to, well, what would have been a motion to remand with the Board of Immigration Appeals at the time. And absent that evidence, there's no way that the agency can reopen under its standard in Velarde and approved by this court in Iglesias. Turning to the board's determination that petitioner was not diligent, that also is not an abuse of discretion.
Now, you're not relying at all on the fact that he failed to depart voluntarily? I think you had a footnote somewhere in your brief about that.
Yes, Your Honor. The Department of Homeland Security's opposition to the motion to reopen notes that petitioner violated voluntary departure. And petitioner's brief implies somehow the prior counsel somehow encouraged him to take this. The immigration judge and petitioner had a very specific discussion about voluntary departure, and petitioner accepted it. However, the agency, the Board of Immigration Appeals, did not rely on that in denying the motion to reopen. So it's simply sort of as a footnote, but the agency did not rely on that very specific finding. But turning to diligence, petitioner did, the agency reasonably, and I think very generously, gave petitioner a benefit and said you'd only learned of the error in August of 2006. But, and at the time, he had, of course, suffered the tragedy of the death of his first child, undeniably, and he had then, 2 weeks later, gotten married. So undeniably, he was busy for an unspecified amount of time. But this court's decision in Yang Guo, as Your Honors are well aware, requires him to essentially show he was diligent and prevented from acting for the entire period. But after these events in his life, he learned of the error at the very least in August of 2006. He took no action whatsoever until at the very earliest regarding the motion to reopen in November of 2008 when he actually filed the motion. And in the meantime, certainly he was involved in his studies and he had his first child was born. But those are common facts of life. Individuals are busy. And as this court has noted, an agency cannot be left on tenterhooks waiting while an individual's life is busy. The system must require that the aliens comply with the congressionally mandated requirement. And simply being busy, which is a common fact of the life of every individual in this courtroom, can't allow the agency or the court to ignore those requirements. So in conclusion, assuming the court reaches the merits, the respondent would ask that the court affirm the finding of the Board of Immigration Appeals and either dismiss or deny the petition for review.
All right.
Thank you.
Ms. Dominguez, anything further?
There are two points that I would like to make very briefly. On page 58 of the certified record, it clearly demonstrates that which is the visa petition form, it clearly demonstrates that he reveals the first marriage to Jennifer Donahue. So there was no way that he was hiding that first marriage. It was revealed. I would also note for the record that under 8 U.S.C. section 1154C, it states very clearly that no petition will be approved if there is a finding that there was a fraudulent marriage, prior marriage. So therefore, they would have had to find that the first marriage was fraudulent in order you know, if there was a finding that there was a fraudulent first marriage, they could not grant the second visa petition at all.
I have a question for you about this access to records. Now, it seems to me inherently implausible that just because he gave certain papers to the prior attorney, he couldn't create a record on this. People lose marriage certificates all the time, and you can go to the county clerk's office or whoever it was who issued the marriage certificate and get a duplicate. You can swear out an affidavit. You can find people. So I don't understand why this was somehow impossible for him to support.
Well, what the government is usually looking for is not just a marriage certificate, because all that proves is that they stood in front of somebody and said, I do. What they're looking for is...
I understand that he didn't even do that.
Yeah, what they're looking for is utility bills, you know, bank records, this kind of thing, to show that there's been a life together. All of that had already been given to Mr. Nguana, and there's really no way to recreate that.
Well, you see, that's what I'm having trouble getting my head around, because if you filled out as many forms as I have, you find ways of finding people who said, yes, she was my next-door neighbor, you know, back in 1920, you know, whatever it was. And so I'm a little concerned with this impossibility argument. I mean, you can comment briefly and wrap up if you like.
I would just submit that it's easier to generate records whenever you have money. When you don't have a lot of money, there's a paucity of records anyway. To try to recreate records of which there may not have been a whole lot to begin with is often impossible, and I can say that Mr. Babo's English is much better than it was when he came to the United States.
But he got a college degree.
Yes.
From a U.S. university.
But there's not an understanding of all of the ins and outs of what is required under law.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will take the case under advisement.